When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 594. Going to recap the week 12 fab, talk about some interesting fantasy lineup situations potentially brewing on the diamond. And in order to do that, I have the lineup expert, the guru, the man himself, joining me on the show. The guy that joins me pretty much weekly outside of a rare occasion here and there. You can find him on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how are we doing, my friend?
Always fun and excited to be here, Bubba. Even though Sounds I completely like forgot about us recording this today. Whoops.
It's all good. We're on time. We're good. Let's get into the news and notes, folks. We have a lot to do here. And the fab's actually interesting this week. Well, because it wasn't big spending, it was more kind of filling in the gap spending, which was very interesting. So let's talk some news and notes here. Lars Nootbaar, he returned on Monday, hit third for the Cardinals. The reason why this is pretty interesting to me, like Luke and Baker got sent back to AAA. That kind of makes sense. But you have Jordan Walker, who's actually hitting really well. You obviously have Dylan Carlson, who had the day off because he's dealing with a quote-unquote injury. You have tons of options. Tommy Edmonds, the starting center fielder all of a sudden, which I don't think anybody took that bingo card to start the season. Dylan Carlson's there. Oscar Mercado's still on the club. They have every outfielder you could have. Like, even if you look at their roster resource page, they don't have an infielder on the bench, technically. Edmonds would be that dude. So, or even Dylan Carlson, I guess. What are you seeing when you look at this Cardinals team from a fantasy perspective with all the people with their hands in the cookie jar?
It's going to get back to being messy. I mean, Jordan Walker is on absolute fire right now, hitting on that pedigree a bit, so he's not going anywhere. So he's going to DH slash play the outfield. He's another player that could, he could play the infield, though. You mentioned hitters that could play the infield. Walker does have experience, I believe, at third base. So third base, he could, yeah, in theory, he could fill in there as needed. But other than that, I mean, it's a typical Dylan Carlson, Edmund factor. Because the thing is Edmund could easily go back to second sooner than later if they, like, especially if O'Neill can return ever and other things. It's just because, like, Gorman's playing absolute terribly. So his defense isn't a plus. The bat is really bad right now. I think last I checked in June, he's striking out nearly 50% of the time. It's almost like full give back month is happening right now for Gorman. And you're seeing the strikeout rate overall creep back to the 30% line, which is something you don't want to see. The power is legit, but when you're swinging, and it's not even just like swing and miss, like we're talking, he's chasing more. The swing strike rate was, I think, 19%. I looked at this yesterday. It's the reason why I can quote this off the top of my head for the month of June. I'm speaking of with Gorman. So you're at the added swing and miss is there. It's evident he's chasing more, maybe starting to press because he's starting to struggle a little bit. Gorman also, just, I know it's a mini deep dive on them. There's just one of those things, again, all the information's there. So, oh, and like the O-swing, the chasing rate, the swinging outside of the zone rate, he's swinging outside the zone. I think it was like, sorry, his O-contact. I apologize. He has above, he's swinging outside the zone more than average. That's probably a given considering I mentioned the swing and miss. But the O-contact, which is contact he makes on said pitches, has gone down. So he's become more aggressive in terms of willingness to swing outside the zone without making the same or more contact. He's making, I think, only 39% contact on pitches outside the zone. This was entering yesterday, so I don't know how much more it's gone up or down, but that's not good. League average is about 62%, I believe it was, on those types of pitches. So he's about 50% as good. He's like 50% below average right now on those pitches outside the zone. So you're swinging more, you're making less contact, you're swinging and missing more in the zone in general. it's a bad combination of things right now for Gorman. Maybe he's a little lost. Maybe pitchers have adapted. There's a lot going on there. You knew pitchers would adapt to what, because, oh, he's succeeding. How can we take advantage of that? So it's going to be up to him to readapt. But at the end of the day, Gorman is kind of someone I'm kind of concerned about with playing time. I know he's already fallen back into a platoon of sorts in terms of going back to his strong side platoon, no longer facing lefties. You know, we saw him face lefties for a little small period there. So at the end of the day, though, that outfield's a mess. Newbar is going to come back and probably play every day. He slotted right back into the top three spot for a reason. I think Edmund's glove will keep him in if nothing else. You know, I know his bat has been awful as well, but the glove, if you're looking at two guys struggling, you're gonna keep the guy with the better glove in there. So Edmund can easily go back to second. Carlson, if he starts hitting again or picks right back up where he left off before he went on the IL, or sorry, before he missed a few days, Carlson can easily slot into the outfield again as well. It's gonna become, I think Nootbaar safe. I think ultimately it's gonna be Edmund, Carlson, and what's his face? Gorman, that could be kind of playing around, fighting for that playing time. I would have said, what's his face? Donovan. Well, there's a lot of what's his faces on this team.
There's a ton of what's his faces on the Cardinals.
Donovan has been playing very well. He's leading off regularly now. He's back to hitting well. It's almost like he gave up the power stroke for going back to his more of like, I'm going to just hit and get on base approach. And you're seeing the batting average creep back up. You're seeing him have a really strong month of June, but without the power. And it's almost like he reverted back to the player he was, probably because he realized the power stroke, although it was giving Donovan success initially, I think pitchers were able to kind of exploit that, and maybe he just didn't like the fact that he wasn't being as helpful to his team. There's a lot of things, or a comfort level thing. Sometimes it takes more than one offseason to gain a level of comfort with a new approach, or it just wasn't working for him. Either way, you're seeing Donovan kind of become at least the player he was last year, which is good for him, not so much for fantasy, good for the Cardinals as well. So at the end of the day, as long as that bat is playing the way it's playing, it's hard to sit that. And that's why I'm like, those three. I know it's a long-winded answer, but I think it's going to be a bit of a mess between Carlson. I think Carlson is the first one to lose playing time, followed by Gorman. And I think Edmund is probably the safest, again, considering just how good the glove is.
So out of all that, you think Walker's locked in right now the way he's playing?
You're not sitting Walker right now.
He's on fire since he got.
Not only is he on fire, but you don't call him back up to sit him. Was always the argument.
This is the Cardinals, though. This is the Cardinals. Let's clarify something.
That's fair. But I don't think that he called him back up. Like, it's one thing if he was ice cold, then maybe he goes back into that weak side platoon and then back down again. Almost the same pattern of like they let him get some run. He was struggling. They cut down his playing time, and they sent him down. I think, but right now, again, you're seeing too much good with Walker. I think Walker's very safe right now. Maybe it's a short leash, but I think he's very safe for at least the rest of the month. And then from there, I mean, that's another two weeks roughly. At least yep. Even if he went on a bit of a slow stretch, I think he'd be safe, but maybe he plays 5 out of 7 instead of 7 out of 7 during that run. You know what I mean? Like maybe he loses an extra game or gets an extra game of rest against a tough righty. Stuff like that could start happening for him. But I think right now he's playing every day, just especially with how good he's playing or hitting.
That's fair. Let's stick with the Cardinals real quick. Matthew Liberatore, it has not gone as planned for those that spent money on Matthew Liberatore. First it was, could he start? Who knows? Then it was, he was mediocre at best the way I saw it over the last few starts. And then you tweeted out some stuff about some velocity issues. So what's your take on Matthew Liberatore right now? Because like Steven Matz is garbage too, but he's in the bullpen. He could take Liberatore's spot. We're looking at the, like even the minor leagues for the Cardinals, there don't appear to be any like great ops, like Dakota Hudson's out there and stuff. There's nothing screaming, come take my spot in the rotation.
I think this is a team that needs to make a trade for pitching if they really want to contend, because they have a bunch of like SP3s and worse. You know what I mean? Like SP3, SP5, they don't have that ace. They don't have that workhorse guy. And Liberatore, I bought into the hype like you. I know we both did. And it was
zero shares.
Oh, yeah. I have zero shares because I spent that money elsewhere prior to his call up. I was saving money for him, though. I can't even act like I wasn't. I was really in on like, oh, he's throwing 90s. And he was consistently throwing like 97, 96, just higher 90s, was really killing it in the minors. I was like, okay, he's kind of reinvented himself, because Liberatore was a former like solid upper tier prospect, I believe, if memory serves, for like the, yes, for the Rays, right?
Yep.
And the Rays dealt him whatever. So maybe that should have been the red flag. The Rays dealt a pitcher.
Yeah, bingo.
But I bought it again. We're talking a guy who made notable gains in velocity, was sustaining those gains, came up and showed them initially, right? Well, then the last three starts, we've seen the velocity dip notably, like more than a mile per hour, almost across the board, but on the fastball and stuff. So now he's becoming more of like a like not the hardest not the hardest tossing lefty, not necessarily soft tossing lefty. He's no Logan Allen, but he's just, I feel like Liberatore was a pitcher that needed that velocity in order for his stuff to play up. So over the last three starts, when I noticed the velo dip, he struggled the start before that as well, but the last three starts have been like the biggest dip in the velocity in terms of being like down a mile power plus. 7 ERA, FIP and XFIP high fives, and a Sierra 5.53, a WHIP of 1.71. So even with the bad velocity, he's allowing a lot of hits, walks, obviously, blah blah blah. The K minus walk rate, 4.5%. Yes, you heard me, 4.5, not 14.
Yeah, it's not good, folks.
Yeah, good. I think
it's better than Alec Manoah, but it's not good.
I think we hit barely, that's the bad thing. And over the last three starts, he only has 14 innings pitched, so he's not even averaging five innings a start right now. He's allowing a ton of contact overall and hard contact at that. So that's part of the issue here. And if his stuff isn't going to play up because of velocity, he needs to be better at commanding it. And right now he obviously just isn't, in terms of, because he's getting hit harder, which means you're leaving too much over the plate. I can probably go look at the scatter plots and all that or the pitch plots and see all that. But it's just an educated guess given the issues. With that said, Liberatore is 15 team. He's a bench, maybe stream off your bench type of guy. 12s, I think we talked about this in the Discord a little bit, that depending on what's on the waiver wire, he could be a drop. Obviously, the upside is there, but right now things are trending the wrong direction. I think Liberatore's production will come and go as his velocity comes and goes. So if his velocity's not there, maybe he's injured, or maybe he's just fatiguing because it's his first year with that increased velo, and it's kind of, you know, we're coming, I bet you, between his minors and majors, what is he at, close to 100 innings, give or take?
Let me check for you real quick.
I'm saying we could probably look it up on the fly if we were smarter. Yeah,
I got it right here. Liberatore, between AAA and the bigs, he's thrown 71 innings.
So 71 innings. So he's still short of 100 innings, but we're talking about
And last year he threw almost 150 between AAA and the majors.
I'm just more so concerned of how much of this new velocity over this period of time, like, is he just fatiguing? That's what I'm getting at. Like, maybe it's one of those things where next year he comes out throwing just as hard again, or maybe he finishes the year, he could be going through a dead arm phase. There's a lot of ifs here. And the problem is, there's just a lot of question marks. It's not even ifs. There's a lot of question marks, and that there's reason for concern with Liberatore. So the innings aren't a concern. I never really questioned the innings pitch. I was more so just curious how this new velocity would hold up over a full season. We see players fatigue when they start throwing more velocity. We see players not be able to make a full season throwing that same velocity, and they'll start dipping as the season goes. I think Lizardo was a guy that last year ramped up the velo, lost it a little bit, got injured in between, came back, and the velo never actually regained full form. This year, he regained form in the velo in the offseason and carried that over so far to this point in the year. So maybe this is a Liberatore going that Lizardo route of had the velo, kind of starting to lose it because maybe he's fatiguing. Next year he can pick back up, and maybe he could be one of those late round DC types, streamer types that give you a little more. You know, next year's Justin Steele, so to speak. I don't know. It's high praise, but you get my point. A guy that's just going really late that you're picking up to see where it goes, and it actually works out. I think maybe we were just a year early on Liberatore, because I don't think that velo was the velocity for me, I don't think was a fluke. I don't think it was an accident. I think it's something that he can hone back in on. It's just a matter of if or when he does it. And again, it depends. Is he pitching through something right now? Is he a little injured? It's just a lot of question marks, but at the end of the day, you can't really start him right now.
No, you can't start him at all. There's a handful of guys like that. We won't get into all of them, but I want to bring a Liberatore just because of the hype that came behind him. And then you mentioned some stuff on him the other day. And something you mentioned there towards the end is we might be a year early, because it's a great comp to Jesus Lizardo. It's a very good comp because Liberatore had that prospect pedigree as well. All the good stuff. Just for fun, for Cardinals fans that are loving life right now, the Cardinals acquired Matthew Liberatore by trading Randy Arozarena and Jose Martinez and a competitive balance 38th overall pick to Tampa Bay. Just throwing that out there for those that wanted a little more sunshine on their day. Let's go to the Cincinnati Reds, because this is a fun one. We debated on Twitter. We talked about it in our Discords and everything else. And then I mentioned I was doing the cheat sheet for our DFS thing, and I mentioned it in the DFS part of the chat. This is going to get annoying as hell with this team, because we already joked, like, where CES going to go. There's nowhere for him to go without platooning. Jake Fraley and TJ Friedel are already pretty much in a platoon. They don't start for lefties, which is tilting. I know Fraley's numbers aren't great, but let's just be real. Fraley is better than pretty much any other option they put out there.
Stuart Fairchild is the best, all right?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. Will Benson's been playing great. He's going to get platooned out, because this all started when Joey Votto returned on Monday. He had a home run, had a great game. Awesome.
You love to see it.
My concern, I mentioned, though, because they were facing Gomber. You had Newman leading off. You had Stuart Fairchild in the outfield. You had Nick Senzel back. You had this whole Steer in the outfield with Votto at first. You had Indy at DH. You had all these situations, right-handed heavy lineup outside of Votto pretty much. And then I mentioned in the DFS chat, I'm like, just be ready. This feels like a Giants thing where they're going to get subbed out when the pitchers change. When Gomber left the game, Friedel and Fraley came in immediately. So why I bring this up, this is going to be insanely annoying to set lineups in fantasy when you see lefties on the agenda. I know we only have one game sample here, Curlin, but I don't see this changing anytime soon. So how are you approaching this from a fantasy perspective?
So as long as Friedel and Fraley are on the team, expect them to be in pretty strict platoons. I think they've been like that for the most part too this year. I know Friedel has kind of, Friedel's been kind of in and out of the platoons, but at the end of the day, these guys are going to be platooning. They're going to get the strong side, which is great. But as you mentioned, they can also lose at bats mid game due to platoons now too. Like before they kind of, I don't recall seeing them get pinch hit much for when a lefty comes in, no, although it can happen
last night. Yeah.
But last night was like, well, and they come in again, like they, Stuart Fairchild was never more than a lefty platoon bat type of thing. So he's going to be the first, he'll be the first, he's useless. Senzel is where I'm curious to see how that falls out because Senzel, I think he's going to be relegated to a weak side platoon at this point slash depth play across the infield outfield because Senzel's only started, I mean, he was injured. So he started only one of the last two against righties. So we'll see how that playing time shakes out, especially now with Votto back because Votto allowed some flexibility. But now you have Steer, who's playing every day, who's going to be moving. He's been playing the outfield more. You have Votto up first. Obviously, the infield is McLean, India, and Ellie, depending on where they play on any given night. The DH allows for all these guys to play, though. That's the thing. So as long as the DH isn't being utilized for one of the infielders, you should be able to get Fraley, probably DHing most nights, Benson in the outfield, and Friedel in the outfield against righties with Steer. That's the thing. Steer can DH first base, and that's where CS comes in.
The infield almost outside of shortstop. Steer's everywhere.
That's what I'm saying. So Steer could probably still keep his everyday role. Don't see that going anywhere. It's more so Senzel. I'm questioning his role with the rest of them kind of having a role. I think right now we're good. It's the problem is because as long it depends on how the DH is utilized. I think the DH could be utilized to help rotate people in, but I think you're going to see a lot of Votto and Steer there as well as Steer in the outfield, which is going to help Senzel stay in. It's going to be a whole thing. But then Stevenson also DHs, even though he probably shouldn't at this point because he's been pretty awful with the bat. But at the end of the day, if they really wanted to bring CES up, they're getting CES reps in the outfield. CES could play the DH and he could almost him, Steer, and Votto can play every day and kind of rotate, keep people healthy. Like between first base, DH, and outfield, those three could still play every day. Right now, there's room, but that's the issue is there's no Senzel is probably the main squeeze here. And then those outfielders, there's so many, they're just those three and Friedel, Benson, and Fraley are just going to be strict, strong sign guys. It's a good problem to have in real life. Annoying for fantasy, and then this week you mentioned it. I think the Reds have three lefties on the schedule. Yep. So you really these guys are no more than streamers off your bench in 15s even. So in 12s it's hard to roster them unless you really have strong feelings about one or the other. And like it's hard. I feel like a Fraley and a Friedel because of where they bat in lineup when they are in against righties are deserving of a bench spot and you utilize them and employ them out against righties because most of the weeks you're going to get 5 out of 6 righties or, 4 out of 6 on a bad week. Usually this is a really bad week. Anything less than 4 righties in a week is usually pretty bad, but you can almost trust Fraley, throw them out there most weeks, even if it's like 2 righties and a lefty in a period, because you know he's going to start those 2 righties and then come in and pinch hit against the lefty, so he's not going to get complete 0 at bats that game.
Yeah, like Monday night he came in and pinch hit and stole a base. So like
and that, so you have to, but that's that. Honestly, we have to kind of adapt to this as fantasy managers. This is the new norm. Yeah. This is the new norm across most teams. Like you're having a lot of teams getting a very, very platoon heavy, and to a point where it's like the Twins are like this, the Giants are like this, the Rays are like this. Guys that start the game don't necessarily finish the game. Josh Lowe has been pinch hit for in game plenty of times. He also comes in. So it's almost like it balances out. Like you out of 3 games, you might get 2 games worth of plate appearances, so to speak, for some of these guys. And that's where it's like, how do you treat a Josh Lowe? You know what I mean? Like a Josh Lowe gets really tough because he can be really elite per plate appearance, but now you're getting less total plate appearances compared to a player that's going to like an everyday player that can get 3. So it's one of those things where you have to start adjusting your expectations for players. Also, that's why like I have a hard time with in-season projection systems for hitters, especially for certain hitters. Some hitters it could be pretty useful for. Hitters we like these guys that we're talking about, it gets really difficult to – I wonder how much of that's baked into the projection. Can they really project partial game at-bats? Or are they just going to do what I said, kind of three games, give them eight at-bats over three games type of thing?
I'd imagine it's that kind of angle.
I would think so too, but it's still tough. And then on top of that, it's so granular with like matchup base, and it's a pain to try to deal with. And then what if they don't get those at-bats? Because say the lefty reliever comes in after a lefty starter, so they get one at-bat instead of two that game. Or the other day, Kyle Lewis sat, and we're going to get to him shortly, but he came in and had three plate appearances still, even though he sat. So how do you project? It's so tough to project. And some teams are worse than others. The Giants aren't the worst anymore, which is wild to me. I think the Twins are.
They're not, I mentioned that. I'm like, they're not as bad as they used to be at all.
I think it's because they actually have good players, enough players to not have to platoon every single player, single position. But anyway, so it's one of those things where you have to understand the team philosophies and which teams are more likely to do it, which ones are more prone to do it, and which teams have shown more of a track record of doing all this platoon mess going forward. So at the end of the day, the Reds are a headache, but you can manage them. I think they're better for you in deeper leagues where it's easier to find a spot for them on your bench to stream them off your bench type of thing. But none of these guys are set and forget types outside of those top four or five in that lineup. Votto's probably going to play every day. I mean, heck, Votto came back, started against a lefty. He's not platooning right then and there. Shows you know, any home run off a lefty. It was Gomber, but it was still lefty. So still you have lefty, that.
And he hit three balls over 102 miles an hour. So he was just fine.
His shoulder's fine. So yeah, you have Votto who's going to play every day. You have Steer who's probably going to keep playing every day. McLean, India, Ellie, those five are playing every day. It's the outfield. So just prepare for the outfield to be a merry-go-round of sorts.
Week to week situation. This is why we know you rest the season questions.
Yes.
Real quick though, you mentioned him, Joey Votto. How aggressive would you be hit on him on fantasy? Because I'm still like, it's one game, so I'm not trying to go crazy here. But we know how we've seen 2 years ago where Votto goes bonkers. Then we saw last year where he struggled, but then we find out he has a shoulder injury all season that we didn't really know about. So if he is healthy, assuming, and like I said, he had three balls over 102, that's usually pretty healthy. How are we looking at him? Because he's going to be on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues right now.
Yeah, I want to get in on him. I really do, but I'm afraid he's going to cost more than he's worth. Because if he comes back, but here's the thing. When's the last time Votto played on a team this loaded with talent?
Bingo. Like, there's guys on base he can actually drive in now. There's guys they're going to want to pitch to him. Like,
he's batting sixth. He's batting fifth or sixth. I think he batted sixth last night. So he's not even bad. That's the thing. So he's not in a prime lineup spot. You need to understand that. And that's going to ding him a little bit, because you would rather him bat fourth or fifth, but right behind the big three young guys, India, McLean, and Ellie. You would love him right in that mix. But I think it was Steer last night and then Votto. I'd have to double check. But at the end of the day, I do think that Votto is very intriguing, a six-hole hitter, but it's the fact that he's going to be an everyday hitter with Cincinnati as his home park, which kind of always goes back to, tell me at what point, at this point of the year, especially in deeper formats, do you find an everyday player off the waiver wire?
That's really difficult. That's why I'm asking this. He's 1% rostered in 12 in OCs. He's 11% in mains. So he's going to be one of your big targets this week. Not you per se, but in general. He will be a topic of conversation next week.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say I'm not in on him. I just don't know what I'm willing to bid, because there's a lot of players coming up. Yeah, there's still a lot of players yet to come up. There's a lot of factors behind my bidding right now. And I just wasted $6 on Pavin Smith, because we're going to talk about that as well.
Yep,
but I know we're getting there, but it's one of those things where I'm still looking to stream players in and out. So I want to have money left over to keep streaming. I enjoy streaming. I think streaming is a very legitimate process to have in terms of like having a spot or two to just stream hitters, hot, cold hitters throughout a week. But Votto would obviously stop that. So it's a little give and take. You spend up a little bit to get them. You don't have as much money to stream, but you don't need to stream as much in theory.
When you have a guy like Votto, because he could be like, we talk about those bench streamers. Like, even if he's not starting for the week, he's a dude you're not cutting either. So he's a
there's value there. There's value there, because there's it's one of those things where it's less mining the waiver wire. Like, you kind of just have a guy there that you can set as needed for injuries, or just plug him in and let him and see where it goes, because it's Joey Votto. And if he has like a road series, maybe sit him. That's what I was talking about this in a different group chat about, like, how, and now I'm just going on a tangent here, but the Red starting pitchers are becoming, like, for me, it's almost like Rocky starting pitchers, where I don't want them because I can't trust to start them half their starts. If you go look at their home road splits, almost all of them have like a 3 ERA difference between their home and road numbers. So I'm kind of like, going forward, it's almost like treating them like Herman Marquez, where everyone's going to start drafting them. Except, like, Hunter Green looked great, but Hunter Green on the road is what looks great. When you look at the overall underlying numbers for Green, even last I checked, it was like a huge difference in home road numbers. So that's why I'm like, I can't, no matter how good they are, I'm just, that ballpark plays up to be more hitter friendly, the course, given the dimensions of it and the humidors and all that. I know it's a whole other discussion point, but I'm not targeting Cincinnati pitching anymore. I don't care how good they are.
You couldn't remember how good Graham Ashcraft was in Scottsdale this year. That turned out pretty good. And Scottsdale, you could hit it in too, but wait till I got to Great American Small Park.
Yeah. It's just one of those things. Yeah. All of them struggled at home more. Hunter Green, again, as good as Hunter Green
was.
This
is why I was so baffled a few weeks ago when we talked about Ben Lively, when he goes at home against like the Yankees and stuff. I'm like, what? And he's starting to get hit around a little more now. And tonight, Tuesday night, he faces the Rockies and Great Americans. I'm curious to see how this one plans out. But it's not a place you want to put pitchers at all. Not a chance. A couple other ones here. Henry Davis got called up. He was the first overall pick in the 2021 draft by the Pirates as a catcher, by the way, but they have him playing in right field, and they already said he's going to pretty much play most of his time in right field. It's just kind of a point I wanted to bring up to people. So you're going to get a catcher eligible player playing nearly every day, not at catcher, is the reason I brought this up. Doubled in his first at bat on Monday. I don't have a whole lot to say because, you know, I've preached Yainer Diaz. You've been on Miguel Amaya. There's been Patrick Bailey. I tweeted it out just the other day. We and Bo Naylor just got called up. We're getting all these catchers now, which goes back to last season where you can almost stream catchers or at least, you know, play him for a couple weeks, get a new guy play for a couple weeks, play matchups for the most part. And Davis just kind of hits that mix again.
See, I'm upset because I liked Yainer Diaz, and I think I was the runner-up bid in my league for him.
I have so much Yainer Diaz. I'm so happy.
I have him on my best DC, which is important because it's top 50 in the overall, so that was a nice little bump there because I had him and Blake Sable were my catcher two and catcher three, so it actually worked out because Blake, appreciate you, buddy, but he's tailed off. Yainer shows up and just does it. So it's been a nice catcher two between the two of them, for sure. But that's neither here nor there. My main issue is that I still need a catcher too. So obviously I'm very intrigued by Henry Davis. That's no secret. I don't know what to expect with Benny. I'm having a hard time reading the market right now because Luis Matos, and we'll get to it later with the whole, like, this is how different the market's just like anywhere from like 150 to like $5, even in mains, which is wild because we're getting that weird part of the year in mains. In main events where the 15 teamers, where teams are just running low on money. I have the third or fourth most fab in my league, and I have like $220. Like, that's where we're at. So it's like Henry Davis, as intriguing as he is, and the playing time is going to be there. And the fact that it's almost like Varsho, not saying he is Varsho, but obviously you look at the 2023 numbers, 11 home runs and 9 stolen bases across his two levels in a little over 220 plate appearances. And this comes with decent plate approach, really good walk rate. And he got caught 4 times, so he's not the most efficient, but he's good enough. And this team, we've seen the Pirates allow their players
to run like crazy. Yeah.
So Henry Davis becomes very intriguing. The ballpark doesn't do many favors, but we're talking playing time and opportunity, and we're talking about catcher. He's up there in that conversation of those names you just mentioned. And another guy that like between him and Votto, I'm very intrigued by this week. Yeah. I'll probably be targeting both in Fab. That's not really, again, it's not really a secret, but it's one of those things where I'm not sure what I want to spend on them. So I can't even give suggestions yet because it really, right now we're at the point of the year where you have to really look at your team, look at your team needs, look at your fab, remaining fab in the league. Who else needs this position? What do they have left? Yada, yada. There's a whole bunch of stuff that goes into this. So do all that homework and then you can pretty much formulate a bid based on that. And the big thing is because he's a catcher, but Henry Davis isn't good enough. In my opinion, I don't think he's going to be good enough to be utilized elsewhere. Those stats are intriguing. I think it'll depend. But I think realistically, if you're not taking him as a catcher, he loses a lot of value. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm not playing him in the outfield. Yeah, he's a catcher for me.
Varsho, I mean, because he does have a little power and speed, so you can't say the skill set wouldn't play everywhere else. But the bidding, you can't be as aggressive as you're going to need to be on him.
Yes.
With in the bidding, because catcher is where he's most valuable to fantasy formats. So if you don't need him as a catcher, don't be aggressive, I would say, because I don't think he's difference making enough. But because of what you're going to need to pay to get him is going to be a good chunk of what you have left remaining in Fab, probably. So anyway, that's Henry Davis. Yeah, there's a lot of intrigue there.
It's a good point.
So just again, it's all about knowing your team needs, but also knowing your league needs. I know there's like 3 other rosters in this league that probably need a catcher. So I got to go look more into that in my league. But Yeah, that's the thing. And also, I have other names in mind. So Henry Davis isn't even a like, oh, I gotta get him. As much as I need a catcher too, I've been having fun. It's weird, but I've been having fun streaming catcher too.
This year. Great. I wrote it up every year after the Black Book. And there's options because of the way teams run their catchers out. Well, now. It's out there.
Don't get me wrong. I wish I got Yainer Diaz so I don't have to stream, because that's one of those things where you hit on him, now you're holding. I haven't had that opportunity. Yan Gomes was fun for like a month,
yep,
and then he's been bad. So, and Amaya saved me. I think he played one game last week, but he hit a home run in like six play appearances. So that kind of salvaged the week because he got a home run out of him. But that was a bust of a stream last week. But he wasn't. I also got outbid on the rest of my targets the week before, Yanner being one of them. I was like, if I don't get Yanner, I'll keep. I think that's what it was. If I don't get Yanner, I'll keep Amaya for one more week, see where it goes. I think Amaya is going to be a solid catcher post trade deadline because I think Gomes is gone, you know?
Yes.
So
yes,
I think Amaya comes up and gets everyday run and it becomes the guy who's playing 5 out of 7 or 4 out of 7, I should say, as a catcher. Maybe gets a DH role here and there. Gomes.
Real quick, I just thought about this. It'll be interesting, though, with your Henry Davis discussion there. There's a good chance Bo Naylor's available in some leagues this week, yeah, and that could offset things as well, because he did get picked up in some leagues, don't get me wrong, but he wasn't like, and it we'll talk about him in OCs. He was picked up in 144 OC, so he's still out there in many that weren't eligible yet. It'll be the same for main events. There'll be a handful of leagues that'll still have Bo Naylor, which in those leagues that'll help offset your Henry Davis costs.
Too bad he's already rostered in my league. Otherwise, Yeah, trust me. I looked. I was like, Bo Naylor is not available. Like, no, because I think he's rostered in 60% of mains already. So he's not going to be as readily available, but Henry Davis is 100%. I'm just upset that I picked the wrong catching prospect from the Pirates. I was really in on Indy.
Oh, dude, Indy. And the thing is, I've heard some people talk about it. They're still in on Indy, and that's why I think they're putting Davis in right field right now. Is they want they want his hit tool up here while Indy keeps working on his defensive skills at catcher type deal is what I heard, but who knows what's true and what's not.
I don't know. All I know is that Indy is, you know, still he's showing himself a little pop, a little speed, but nothing crazy. We're talking, it's just, and the good plate discipline still. He's getting some bad Babbitt luck, but I'm just wondering how long he's just not doing enough with the bat right now, I think, is part of the issue for Indy. So,
but just remember, Austin Hedges is around and that can't last forever. So like,
this, I mean, Austin Hedges and Mike Zunino were catchers for this year. It feels like 2015 all over again, like, or 2016. Yeah, like they've been around, man. Jeez,
it's been around. All right, let's talk Royce Lewis. You kind of hinted at him earlier. This has been a fun topic of conversation in chats and Twitter and everywhere else, because the dude's good, no denying that. The skills are great. They just haven't panned out consistently enough on the diamond yet, and people are getting restless because that's what people do. Over 59 plate appearances, he's hitting .281 with 2 home runs, 0 stolen bases, and striking out 34% of the time. Those aren't great, but he's still very good, and I'm not in a panic mode at all if I have shares of Royce Lewis, because, A, what are the Twins going to do? But some people are saying he's a bust already. So what's your thoughts on Royce Lewis?
I think there's always been a little bit of concern with the swing and miss outside of 2022, this very small sample at the major league level. He's always been a double digit swinging strike guy. He's still there. So he's worse than the average there, but while being that type of guy, Lewis can usually make a good amount of contact, or at least good enough amount of contact to like where the skills or the tools outplay some of the metrics. He's just that type of player. Now this right now, what he's doing is unsustainable. So, and this is unbiased because obviously I am a Royce Lewis manager. He's, you know, chase rates at 40%, league average being like 31, 32. The contact rates are not great. He's just making the contact work for him. Like the contact he is making, it's a 400 BABIP. There you go. That would explain it. He's kind of a higher BABIP guy, but not that high. But at the end of the day, he's pressing. I think Lewis is pressing a bit, chasing more than he usually chases. He's always been aggressive though, because he swings a ton. Always at 50%. The two samples we have is always around 50% rate. So he's always a big swing guy. Obviously there's reasons for concern here a little bit, but at the end of the day, you gotta be patient. I mean, I learned my lesson not being patient with Christopher Morel, and that's kind of what I always circle back to. Like, I want to give a chance for the tools to play. I think these tools are legitimate and rather potentially like fantasy. Like they could be game changing, but they could be not league winning, the right word, either, just a legitimate boost, a big boost to your offense. A guy who could be difference. I think difference making is a fair way of describing Lewis's potential with those tools. But yeah, we haven't seen them play up. We saw him hit the 2 home runs early when he came up, and that's kind of been it. The reason why I'm optimistic is because while struggling, while pressing at the plate, we're still seeing Lewis hit .280. Now, will that dip? Absolutely, if he doesn't fix things. But I do believe that the skills are there to fix things and to be better than he's been. So just got to give him a chance to get acclimated to that major league pitching, and I think Lewis will be just fine. But there is that off chance where we were a year early. I think Lewis was one of those things. This could be this year's, like, where he comes up, struggles, gets sent back down, and next year he's a huge draft discount when he shouldn't be. There's a very good chance of that. And it hurts to say that. It pains me to say that because obviously I'm a Lewis guy. But realistically, 24 years old, just turned 24, showing some, you know, issues at the major league level. But he could be, he could easily be next year's Josh Lowe, Nolan Gorman. Easily. He can even, he can still figure it out. But yeah. Worst case scenario, he doesn't, and he's next year's draft value rookie. That, like, post-hype sleeper, because or breakout, whatever you want to call it for fantasy. So yeah. He's not a guy that I'm giving up on at all, short-term or long-term. But if he keeps struggling short-term, there could be a path to Lewis getting sent back down to the minors, like Jose Miranda has, you know, even though I think Miranda's turned it around. But at the end of the day, I'm still optimistic. I believe in the tools and the player more than, if nothing else.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I'm not giving up on Lewis yet. Dude's too talented for this little hiccup to take place. Doesn't help that the Twins all around him aren't pretty garbage right now too. So makes life a little difficult. Last question I got for you here, our last topic before we get into the fab of the week. D-backs depth chart. I just wanted to mention it because they sent Josh Rojas down to AAA on Monday, and they recalled Alec Thomas, who went deep, but more importantly, started in front of one Paven Smith yesterday. So you had Corbin Carroll, Alec Thomas, and Jake McCarthy in the outfield. With Paven Smith, you have four left-handed outfielders now, which makes platooning very complicated, one would say. Lourdes could play the outfield as a righty, but he's pretty much been DH only this season, and for good reasons. So this, it was one thing when, you know, you had other guys up there and Paven Smith could play. But now with Alec Thomas coming, who was playing great in AAA, by the way, he had three homers, two steals, hitting like .354 or something. But he was walking or striking only 15% at a nice ISO and almost a 1,000 OPS. So Thomas was playing great in the PCL. How do you go about this? And I ask this because you picked up Paven Smith to stream this week, which before that move took place was a great streaming situation. But now there are questions on how this might play out.
Yep. And I sat Paven Smith, even though he had four righties on the schedule Monday through Thursday, because I think at best right now, and Thomas hitting a home run did him no favors, I think at best right now, Paven Smith is going to play two out of four. You know, you'll see Gurriel get a day off. You know, Gurriel DH yesterday, he tends to get a day off. And then you'll have Paven Smith play that fourth outfielder role, maybe back up first base. So in theory, I think there's a path to him playing these three games. If they plan on giving Gurriel a day off, Walker a day off, and then maybe he plays the fourth outfield role and gets an outfielder spot for, and one of those guys get a day off. That's realistic. I didn't want to bet on that though, because think about how much has to go right for Paven Smith to get those three games, especially, and you mentioned they have all these lefty options. I don't see, and Smith, the problem with Smith also defensively, he's a liability. He's not good in the field at any position from like, he's like a negative one or negative two outs above average in both first base and outfield. So one of those things, or at least I think it was outfield this year. I'm not sure about first base. I think I'll double check that. But regardless, the glove hasn't been able to play up. And you have Alec Thomas, who we've seen flashes. Last night, he showed more flashes hitting that home run. But, and you mentioned his strong AAA. So Thomas has the glove and the bat is comparable, I think. Paven Smith isn't that good. He's a replacement level in real life and in fantasy. It was just one of those things where it's like, ooh, seven righties. I want to get him. I made a point to go get him. And the next day, he's on my bench for Coco Montes, who can't hit his way out of a, he can't hit the broadside of a barn. He just can't.
Yeah.
I can't. I'm so upset because last night I was like, I'm like, all right, this is going to be a fun one. You know, three games in Cincinnati and then three at home against Coors, four lefties. He's a weak side platoon bet, but he's going to at least, I think I projected him for five out of six games because Tovar is probably going to be out the first series with his child being born. So I'm like, Montes should get the play the whole first series. So cool. Whole series in Cincinnati. Montes gets up the bat with two men on, strikes out. Bases loaded, one out, strikes out. I was like, gosh, I mean, come on. So it's like, I'm laughing at it because I'm like, I thought it was a very, very dark horse stream / ad just to see where it goes type of thing because of the matchups and all that. He had like a very favorable, like a bunch of favorable factors, but very, very bad start. And Montes is just possibly just not good. Like, like that's a very big possibility too. There's a reason why he was called up to be a weak side platoon. he was dominating, but at 26 years old in AAA, you should dominate that level. He could just be a quad A player at the end of the day, though. Yeah. So I don't even know how I got to Coco Montez. Oh, that, because of Pavin Smith. Thank you, Pavin Smith.
You went down your streaming rabbit hole of how things are just frustrating right now. But that's, we've talked about that many times, the process results thing. You can only do so much, and then you hope they perform. And
he checked all the boxes except Montez checked the boxes for me this week in terms of having the matchups, having the ballpark. And it's not like he's facing tough pitching. You know, it's the Reds, and it's the back end of the Reds rotation at that. And so I was like, he's checking all these boxes for me. Too bad he can't hit the ball. I forgot that box. He didn't check that box, apparently.
The bright side is you get three. Well, Montez won't be around for this, but if you are a Colorado streamer, you have three at Cincinnati, then you have three this weekend in Colorado, and then you have six next week in Colorado. Well, so that's two full weeks of just hitter's paradise.
Another thing. If Montez got going this week, I was thinking, okay, cool. There's a chance that he's usable next week. But this week was a good week because I mentioned he's a weak side platoon bat, four lefties, two in Cincinnati, two in Coors. So he's getting playing time this week. It's just a matter of, can he do anything with it? And so far, not so good, which is just, again, it's more so funny because I knew he was a big, it's a lottery ticket play. There's a reason why he was like, I think I was one of three or four teams to add him. There's a reason for that. Not because he's good. You know what I mean? Let's see where this goes because of the upcoming schedule and all that. And he's looking every bit of, there's a reason why he was 26 in AAA, I guess, you know,
pretty much.
But we'll see. It's still early. It was one bad game. Coco, I believe in you, buddy, if you're listening to this, which you're not. But if you happen to, I believe in you, Coco Montez. It sounds like it's such a cool name. It's like Coco Crisp.
We're going to make somebody make a Disney meme for the movie Coco, but use Coco Montez and see how we can do it. All right. Let's talk some fab from the week. As usual, I use the 12-team OCs fab results. Curlin will sometimes bring up the main event 15-teamers. And Curlin hinted at it because usually main events are kind of more of a structured fab for the most part, little wiggle room, but not much. The Wild West is the OCs. And I tweeted it out on Sunday. It was Father's Day. I was coming back from dinner. I looked on my phone at the fab results, and in every league, it was all over the board. Like, we'll get to Sheehan, and when I do my three leagues, I'll show you the price differences in those. Matos, it was bonkers. I believe it was Matos or Sheehan. I'll check when we do my recap. Didn't even get picked up in one of my leagues. It was bonkers because I had like no money. So I was streaming like the Bensons of the world. I'm like, I'm not going to waste my time. This is why you do keep modest bids. And I know people hate that term, but that is why right there. I'm furious. And I could have had a $1 Luis Matos. And that is very, very frustrating to me. But we'll get to that shortly. And we'll start with the man, Luis Matos, who was picked up in 176 OCs, the most added player this week. For as high as 283 and as low as a dollar, which is very true, as you can tell by my anger in this situation. I talked about it on Thursday with Bloomfield, the day he got called up, that my only concern is I wanted to see the weekend how he would play versus right-handed pitching, because when he got called up, he started, but then he got pinch hit for when the lefty bullpen or relievers came into the game against St. Louis. Well, over the weekend in LA, Matos was the dude. He was playing every day. He played again on Monday night. He's got hits in three or four games. He's got seven runs scored already in a stolen base. He has zero strikeouts in five games while walking 24% of the time. He's almost too patient though, which I think is affecting his power just a bit by looking at some things. But the skills are there for Matos. We saw it in the minors. The fact the Giants played him over the weekend got me more excited to potentially roster him going forward. So what's your thoughts on Luis Matos?
What's not to like right now? You know, he's up. The fact that he's only 21 years old, coming up, showing such poise, 23% walk rate to no strikeouts in five games. Like he's walking a quarter of the time. That's ridiculous. And he's always been a guy that when you look at his numbers, it's always been a very strong walk rates, at least recently over the last couple seasons. But it's really strikeout rates are always really good. The highest he's ever had was a 16% strikeout rate. And as he's actually gone up in the minors, it's gone down, which is, you know, typically the opposite. So you know that's legitimate. The stolen bases, I'm not sure how much the power we should buy into because it was kind of new this year in AAA. But I don't know, do the Giants play in the hitter-friendly?
They're in the PCL. AAA? Sacramento, the ball flies out of Sacramento. So ball flies in pretty much any PCL ballpark.
That's what I'm saying. Are they playing the PCL? I thought so. So that could help explain some of the power. We have seen the power play up a little bit, but not a ton, like not like that. So I'm wondering how much of that is the ballpark. It was the first time he's had an ISO over 200 with meaningful plate appearances at any level. So I lied, rookie ball. anyway, in 2019. But my thing is about Matos is I wouldn't expect the power to be almost like, you know, how Thairo Shotter kind of just makes it happen. I think Matos could be that eventually. I just don't know if that's going to translate right away. But the stolen bases are a thing. You know, he's stolen double-digit stolen bases each of the last four stops he's made. Yep. So I think we're going to see the stolen bases come around eventually. We already saw one, as you mentioned previously. So Matos is a guy that the hit tool is legit. The plate approach is very, very strong. 2.3% swinging strike rate. 100% Z contact. He hasn't his own contact is 100%.
He's made contact. It's insane what he's doing.
This is while only chasing on 20% of pitches. Like that's absurdly amazingly elite right now. His swing rate is really low, as you mentioned. Very, very patient approach. Very, very good eye. Feels like it's like Luis Arraez type of like approach right now is what you're seeing. Now, will that sustain? Obviously, he's not going to keep up this torrid of a pace. He's going to strike out. Sorry to say it. You know, sorry to break it to you, but Matos, there's a lot of safety here, a lot of safe, solid production. He's not a zero for power, but I wouldn't expect a whole lot with the stolen bases being a thing. So, and he's batting sixth, so there's good RBI opportunities in this lineup. I think the fact that he has all the runs and no RBIs is funny, but you know what I mean? Batting sixth is usually better for RBIs, you would think. Anyway, Matos is solid, safe, kind of bland, set and forget type. I think he's better served for 15s because I don't think there's enough juice there for 12s. I think I can see the use in five outfielder leagues, don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't have been as aggressive in 12 teamers personally, because I don't think I think what he offers outside of batting average floor, I think is like 250 right now. I think that's almost the floor outside of batting average and some stolen bases. I don't think there's a whole lot of juice there. So you kind of have to understand that going there. He's like, he's kind of just set him, forget him type, which is great for 15s, but in 12s, I feel like you can just stream or find better sooner than later. In terms of, so it's really team need based in shallow formats, I think, for Matos.
100%. That's kind of how my bids differed from sites. That's why I didn't even have him bidded in one league. So welcome to Thunderdome. The next most added player this week was Emmett Sheehan, the pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers. 173 leagues, as high as 221, as low as a dollar. Yeah, another guy where the bids were insane for him all over the board. I was pulling up the Guild's Twitter real quick because he hit just the absolute nuts. There it is. In one of his, I think this has to be an OC. He got Emmett Sheehan for a dollar unopposed, Patrick Bailey for a dollar unopposed, and Luis Matos for a dollar unopposed. Whoever's in that league should be thrown to the sun right now, because that is absolutely like horrific. And I'm not trying to be funny. Like, I just tilting beyond tilt. But Sheehan, 6 shutout innings, 3 walks, 2 Ks in his debut, 6 no-hit innings, I should say. Didn't look overly dominant to me, but obviously got the job done. And it was against the Giants, and the strike zone was freaking ludicrous. I'm going to throw that one out there. It was horrible what they were getting away with. But he was great in Double-A, 88 Ks and 53 and a third innings pitched for a 42% K rate and an 11% walk rate. Kid's good. My only concern with Sheehan, and this might just be me getting too over the top with it, is I'm wondering about long-term starts here. Like, they have him at Houston this week, at Colorado next week. When I was doing bidding, he wasn't even scheduled to pitch next week. He was still kind of a one-to-one start type guy. But it feels like he's just holding spots on Luis Urias comes back next Friday, a week and a half from now. And then I wonder if Sheehan sticks around, because they won't need him anymore, is my point. Or do you take Michael Grove's spot and Grove takes off? That's where it gets interesting. So that's why I wasn't super aggressive on Sheehan. What's your thoughts?
Well, I believe they sent Grove down, right?
He's scheduled to start on the starting grid. He's scheduled to start tomorrow against the Angels.
Huh. I thought they sent him down.
I will look while you talk.
On roster resources, I'm not even showing him on the rotation. Yeah,
I'm on RotoWire, and he's starting tomorrow in Anaheim. So,
well, would that be? Did they send him down because they had 10 or is it minimum 10 days to call back up? Right.
So maybe there was an injury. Yeah. So you can't just do that. Yeah. You talk, and I'll look this up.
Well, so Sheehan, the reason why there's interesting, it's interesting to me just because, you know, he has the three pitches, the four seam, changeup, slider, the fastball sitting about 96, give or take, with almost a 13 mile per hour difference between the fastball and changeup. You always like to see a big gap there. I think 10 miles per hour is kind of like the happy spot. So 13 mile per hour difference is kind of pretty fun there. And he's able to throw the changeup against lefties, the slider both sides, but more so against righties. So he has a pitch for both handedness, but he threw the changeup exclusively to lefties in the first start. So we'll see how that ends up playing up. But fastball.
Okay, real quick. Yeah, Grove got sent down over the weekend to bring Emmett Sheehan up. But what they're saying, they can put someone on the IL and bring him up because his regular day's rest would line up with tomorrow's start. So
that's
sorry.
What I figured.
That's what I was reading. So it looks like they're going to IL someone more than likely than not to bring him up to pitch tomorrow.
Makes sense, which doesn't surprise me. That's the Dodgers are dodgering. They're still finding a way to do go full Dodgers on us, you know, like play the system. But all they have is Urias. So if Urias comes up and you're right, it's going to depend on Grove. And maybe they don't want to. I was afraid of Sheehan being a one and done deal. That's why I'm with you. I played a little scared here. I also felt like although Sheehan is a difference maker at this point of the year compared to what's likely to come up, especially what's on the waiver wire, like I just didn't have the fab to go. I mean, don't get me wrong, he went as low as $12 in
I didn't think I had the fab either, but apparently I did, looking at some of these bids.
Well, some of these bids, and don't get me wrong, some of these bids, like if I could have gotten towards the bottom third here, like a lot of people that got them were like under $50 in main events, which that's a great value. I think at least like it looks like at least 15 teams got them for under $50. So that's a price point I could have afforded, but the problem is I have other perceived needs on my team and I have other ways I want to allocate my remaining fab. So personally, I wasn't betting against, I feel like Sheehan was, although he was definitely going to be helpful. And if you could get him, again, Guild's got him for a buck on a team that's in first place, that's stupid and it shouldn't be allowed. But anyway, can we do the whole, like NFBC goes in and takes him off the, like, no, you're not allowed to have him just because it's not fair to the OCs. But anyway, it's it's at the end of the day, I like what we're seeing here. I like what we've seen in the minors to this point from Sheehan. Like, how do you, I don't know how to say
Sheehan, but I've been known to mispronounce things too.
He's also, I wonder how many innings does he get? Cause last year you're looking at it.
That's a big one. Coming from Double A.
67 innings last year. So 68 innings last year. So he's already at 59. So what is he capped at 100, 110, 120 maybe?
I'd say 100 ish.
That's what I'm saying. So don't get me wrong. So another 60 innings, that's another what? Give or take 10 starts, roughly?
Yeah, we'll say 10 to 12. Just give him 5 innings of start, see what happens. But yeah.
Yeah, so 10 to 12 starts, that puts him – I mean, it's 2 months of help for the price. It makes sense in most places. But yeah, it's at the end of the day, though, he could be a different – he could be a help, very helpful piece in the short term. But yeah, there are reasons for concern in terms of sticking in the rotation if they actually want to keep Grove in there or not when Julio Urias returns.
Yep, 100% with you on that one. So we'll have to see. I know people hate it, but this is why we say terms like keep him on his bids, because there's some just stupid stuff taking place that don't make sense more often than not. Bo Naylor, talked about him a second ago. He was picked up in 144 leagues, as high as 111, as low as $1. Naylor's the big-time catching prospect with Cleveland. They DFA'd Mike Zunino to make room for Bo Naylor. He's hitless in his first two games, but in the minors, hitting .253, 13 homers, a couple stolen bases. At AAA, big thing though, 18% walk rate with a 19% K rate. That OBP skills were outstanding, almost a 400 OBP in the minors, which is very, very strong. So I like what we kind of see from Bo Naylor. I didn't really need a catcher, so I wasn't aggressive on Bo Naylor. I think I had him like in one league where I did need a catcher, but for the most part, I like him, but didn't really need him. So what about you?
Yeah, it's very similar to the passive approach you were talking about with Matos, and it's almost very. I think it's closer to Nolan Jones than is Matos, because Matos makes way more contact. So I think Nolan Jones, in terms of plate approach, can be a better comp because Naylor's a guy that doesn't chase a ton, makes good but not great contact. Swinging strikes aren't an issue for Naylor, at least so far, and you know, through the minor leagues hasn't been much of an issue. So Naylor's a guy that kind of offers that. It's just that.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
That very, very, what's the word I'm thinking? Patient played approach of Naylor that can be a concern for fantasy because we've seen that approach get attacked a time or two in the major league level. Guys like, I think it's Gorman was like that a bit last year. I know Josh Lowe, Nathaniel Lowe, I know both those guys were very passive at one point, at points in their career as well, which hindered their production. Nathaniel Lowe obviously completely turned that around. He became more aggressive and hasn't slowed down since finding that new approach last year. And Josh Lowe, although going through a bit of a downward turn, I think there's going to be more good than bad for him moving forward as well. But it's a change of approach that was needed for him to find some success. So I think Naylor can have some growing pains with it, just like Jones. I think Nolan Jones, you know, he'll have his growing pains. He's kind of slowed down a little bit with the power, but it's still there. But anyway, I digress. These two guys, that's where that player approach. And ultimately, it always reminds me of Conforto. The name Conforto, I remember being like super high on him, like 2019, 2020 range. And I'm like, why is he hitting for such bad average? And this and that. It's always, he always just had that same approach where Conforto was just very much patient, didn't chase a lot, didn't swing a ton, but made adequate contact and always did damage with the contact he made. And that's why it's like, I feel like these guys are in that comfort. Like, Conforto's always the comp that comes to mind because he was the first guy that, when I started doing fantasy analysis, he was the first guy that caught my attention doing that whole like, dude, just swing the bat more, please. Just swing it, because you have the skills to do so much more damage if you just swung the wood a little more. That's what she said.
Yes, that's what she said. So we'll stop at Bo Naylor on that one.
Naylor.
Yeah, see, we can keep going all day. Jordan Hicks picked up in 143 leagues, as high as 93, as low as a dollar. He's the next big thing. If the injury to Ryan Helsley, which seems to get worse and worse with each bit of news you get, it seemed like it would be Giovanni Gallegos, who was pitching well all season. He got the first shot, got blown up. Insert Jordan Hicks. He's picked up three straight saves now, one of them on Monday, already paying off for people that bid on him. And he's looked electric in these three outings. He's kind of looking like the guy many thought he would be a few years ago before injuries and just trying to start bullpen back and forth were playing out. I mentioned last week I dropped Paul Sewald. I have too many closers on my team, so like I didn't have a need for a Jordan Hicks. He's very good. I'll be honest though, I still feel Giovanni Gallegos is not far away in that scenario, so I wouldn't get comfortable the way they used Helsley and Gallegos already. I could see a Hicks Gallegos still happening, but so far so good with Hicks. What do you got on them?
Yeah, Hicks, I think you nailed it on him. It's just, we've seen him even this year go through hot stretches of being like an elite reliever for them and then just like missing his spots and having a hard time. And I think that's kind of the Hicks experience. He throws the ball so hard that he just kind of, if he just dialed it back, I think he'd be better off in terms of getting that location. But there's, I'm sorry. I mean, the strikeouts are never a question. The guy has great stuff, but when you have 6 walks per 9, that's not going to play as a closer. He's going to get into trouble. He'll go through a hot stretch. And right now he's in the middle of one and you're catching it. It's great. But at the end of the day, he doesn't locate well enough for that stuff, man. It's electric. It's elite in terms of like the velocity, but Hicks is not, I don't think he's made to be a closer given the lack of command and control of his arsenal. So There's a reason why he struggles every year. There's a reason why his underlying metrics are always better than his actual outcome. He's one of those guys that underperforms underlying metrics instead of overperforming them, because he just has, I think it's a lot of it's the location issues. And it's funny because last year I was on the tag team. I had a tag team with Waxman, and I made him get Hicks and be aggressive, and it ended up being a wasted pick because I thought this was going to be what he did last year in terms of just factoring into the saves off rip, because they were talking about how Gallegos was going to be used in high leverage situations, not the sole closer, and Hicks never got it. That's where Helsley came in. So I picked the wrong guy last year. This year all around, I stayed away from it altogether. And honestly, this one, I wasn't getting in on him. He went from where I was willing to, he was for a decent price. I think it was like 40. I'm actually looking it up right now. I think it was 45. He went in my league, 45, 46, 47, right around there. And 45 to Jewett of all people, of course. And it's one of those things where I don't think I would have been that high on him just given my needs. I mean, I have Holmes. I have, who's the other closer? Oh, Estevez. So those are both guys on teams I don't expect to get traded. I'm not trying to spec on saves right now. They're serviceable. A third closer would be ideal to gain saves, but I just don't know how long the leash is going to be. And I'm with you, kind of. Even Helsley at his best was sharing. I don't think Hicks is suddenly going to get a full-time shot at it. And the fact they got three straight, maybe they will let him go until he blows one at this point.
Yeah, very, very possible on that.
But the leash has to be short, right? You would think.
Yeah, and that's why I just want to group these next two together, because we just mentioned Hicks. It's just, we're getting to that point of the year where closers are becoming a popular topic here. Scott McGuff was added 106 leagues for $51 to $1. Edward Alzolay, 70 leagues, $79 to $1. McGuff's got a couple saves over the last few weeks. Alzolay's looked outstanding. So let's just have fun with this. Hicks, Alzolay, McGuff. Which one would you have been in on?
Probably McGuff, just because that's who they wanted to start the year with. You know, that was the guy to begin the year. Castro, although serviceable, hasn't looked great of late. Chafin's still lefty. McGuff, ever since figure, I think he had a tell, or he was tipping his pitches, I believe, was the issue. He fixed it. Ever since they found what was the issue, he's been pretty much lights out and what they wanted him to be when they first got him. But I don't think that team in general is, I think the issue with that team is that there's no set guy ever. So I think McGuff can just be the most valuable in that bullpen. And I think, but there was a reason why that, I just go back to how they treated him at the beginning of the year. And he was the one guy where they kept turning to him for every opportunity initially before he just couldn't, you know, nail it down. So I think that there's Lobello, I can't ever say his name. I think the manager there likes McGuff and wants him to be the guy. So I think McGuff's going to be the most useful option. And I say that because I say that as someone who dropped Miguel Castro, because I'm like, even though Miguel Castro will still factor, I don't think Castro's the guy anymore. I think McGuff's going to take over that lion's share, and deservedly so. He's been good.
Yep, I'm with you.
You forgot another name. Jason Foley was very popular, at least in Maine's. And
then we saw
Alex Lang get the save last night. So
he was added in 38 leagues. Yeah, Lang bounced back, and even AJ Hinch said, I was looking forward to giving Lang the ball the first chance I could. So, yeah, he's being loyal to his dude. That's for sure.
I wonder if they're just trying to squeeze every little bit of value out of him.
No, not the Tigers. Not a chance.
Lang is going to be a great setup man somewhere else.
Yes, he will. I wonder how much Tigers do.
We do have to look. One thing we have to factor in more than ever is team control. And if a team, like if they have like 3 or 4 years,
I'll tell you right now. Imagine Lang's got quite a bit because
he's. I'm wondering if they deal him or not because I don't know.
Lang's not a free agent until 2028. Yeah, I think he has 3 minor league options. He's ARB eligible in 2025, so he's the bare minimum for a couple more years. I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah, he's pre ARB. He's not even ARB. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. He's not ARB eligible for a couple more seasons.
I think they're just gonna keep him there, and they might trade him. I bet you they trade him next year because of that way they get out of paying arbitration prices. So they're gonna build up. They're gonna keep giving him saves.
Build his value, and then they deal him off.
Yeah, because he's 27 too. So there's no. I don't see a team paying what could be a premium given the amount of control left on a reliever, and he's 27 years old. Maybe they don't get as much as I'm thinking because of age. He's in his prime, but by the time a team has to pay him, I'm wondering, because there's gonna be so many more teams competing. A bullpen piece like this could really go a long way for a team.
Yeah, things could change. So, the landscape has changed a ton.
I just have such a hard time believing a team pays what it might take to get, considering the amount of years that they get with him. I wonder what the asking price is going to be compared to what they get. There's a lot of it. I don't know. If there's a random closer that doesn't get traded, I guess Lang ends up being, could be the guy that, although should get traded from a team like the Tigers, might not.
Yep. yeah, let's see how it plays out. Brian
Wu does. I still think he does. Sorry. Anyway,
Brian Wu was added in 71 leagues, as high as 133, as low as a dollar. He was added a lot last week for his two step. You know, his first start of the year, 2 innings, 6 runs, 4 Ks in Texas. That was Texas, folks. He went to Anaheim and home against the White Sox, combined for a 10 1/3 innings, 4 total runs, and 16 strikeouts. What are your thoughts on Brian Wu, who I did grab a couple shares of this week?
I think we were all wrong not to take advantage of that suppressed price.
Very angry with that, yes.
And not that it's one of those things where I'm learning the hard way, and I think a lot of people are starting to make note of this. I think I've heard Rob on his podcast and other podcasts mention this at this point. Rob DiPietro, for those curious which Rob I'm talking about, not Silver, because there are two Robs on Launch Angle, but I think this was Pete DiPietro on Pull Hitter Pod talking to Dom about this. And there's a Sunday. So there's a Sunday tax. Absolutely, we know this. But there's also the opposite of, like, Wu went out and struggled, I think, Saturday right before Fab, and or Friday. It was like a start right before Fab happened, and that's what suppressed the prices. And instead, maybe going forward, teams like the Mariners, who are willing to be a little more like, okay, you're going to stick it out up here with us, a team like that that's betting on one of their top guys from the minors, maybe you bet on the talent and ignore the production if it's a good, if it's a bad start, and you get them on a discount, and if it doesn't pan out, you drop them anyway. I think that there's something to be learned there moving forward from a lot of people. And I think we're all learning on the fly this year, because as good as players are in NFBC and overall in general, I think this year is the first year we're seeing so many teams be overly aggressive with their minors, with their minor leaguers, with their top prospects. We're seeing teams really take advantage of the new rules and just play their guys and don't really care. It seems like we have to adjust for that in our analysis. We have to adjust for that in our draft prep. And we have to adjust for that in Fab. And a guy like Wu, who had some pedigree, who had some upside that people were really excited about, goes out and gets shelled because of all the other rookies that went out and dominated their first start. We just assumed he was a bust. And we as like the general consensus was just like, nah, I'm good. And that's why he was so cheap initially. That was a mistake. And I think that was a mistake that those who didn't make are very happy and got a big boost for, because you got a really solid value from a guy in Wu who's been very, very good for your fantasy rosters and who's probably gonna be good rest of season, a solid contributor at the very least. And good on you for not buying into the one start bad, the hype. And my issue is, I have to get better at that bias. I've learned, and that's why I'm being more patient with Kyle Lewis for reference, because I learned what happens if you do. Yeah, I always call him Kyle Lewis because I have a spot in my heart from 2020 when I was so in on Kyle Lewis. I was a Mariners fan for that year. I bought the hat, got the shirt made. I got a CBK jersey from the Mariners because I adopted the Mariners as my team that year. I was a couple years early, but man, the Mariners are fun. The Mariners and the Reds are just so much fun. The Reds more so than the Mariners now, because Mariners aren't looking so great, but the Reds are the new team that everyone's like, just you got to root for them. You do. I mean, don't get me wrong. I wish the Marlins had any type of hitting like that. Because if you take the Reds hitting with the Marlins pitching, yeah. you get the Tampa Bay.
No. Real talk. Would the Marlins pitching be as good in Great American Small Park? That's a whole other conversation.
But would the hitters? That's the problem
in Miami. Yeah.
Would the hitters be as good in Miami? Or would the Marlins would have screwed up the development of those hitters? The Reds probably would have screwed up the pitching development. The Reds would have screwed up the pitching development of the pitchers. But it's the what if. You know, you take the two together and you get the Tampa Bay Rays. Like that's what it is. The Rays do that, and they do that even with lesser talent. They make it work anyway. It's impressive. I just wish the Marlins and the Reds could turn that corner. The Marlins, obviously, the Reds and Marlins are turning a corner, but I think they're both, you know, they might contend for a wild card spot, but it's just they're not real contenders. They're pretenders. We know it, but it's still fun. It's still fun to root for the underdog. The Giants are also doing the Giants things, where they're competing with. Who knows, like, how they're doing? It's wild. The Giants do this, though. The Giants are known to do this.
Don't get me started on that. I don't have that much time in the day to go talk about my Giants, so don't get me started there, because I'm actually pumped right now. Let's recap our Fab from last week, Mr. Curlin. I know you're a busy man, all two moves you made. So, hey, what do you got for us?
I made four moves this week. Ooh. And I already talked. That's a lot. That is a lot. I haven't had to make many moves. I was also stubborn enough to stash Varland, who I know has been terrible, but I think there's a happy medium in the good start and the rough stretch. So I'm stashing. I do expect him to get sent down, or they've talked about going six man. I just want to see if he can get right. Just because I looked at what's on the waiver wire, I'm like, I can't justify dropping him for what? I looked at the waiver, I'm like, for what? And there really just wasn't much. I stashed Varland, so I'm counting that as a move. But the other moves I mentioned, added Coco Montez, dropped. I should probably look up who I actually dropped. I think that's important to mention who I dropped. So give me a second to pull that up. But anyways, I can talk about who I added in the meantime. So it was Coco Montez. As again, we mentioned him. No need to talk about him more. Then I added Pavin Smith, which I also mentioned why and how he's useless to me. And for some reason, it's not loading, so it doesn't matter who I dropped. I added Jake Rogers. I'm really excited about that. He went 2-for-3 to start the day. He's on a bit of a heater. So I told you I'm streaming catchers, catcher two to be specific. So that was the guy I got. Oh, I dropped Will Brennan. So that sucked. Like, Will Brennan's good, but he's useful. I just wanted some category juice upside, and that failed me. I dropped Coco Montez. When I added Coco Montez, I dropped Miguel Castro. I mentioned that already too. Kyle Wright, I added for $4 unopposed. I think it's stashing season for him in deeper formats. I know a lot of people aren't very high on him, but there's nothing on the waiver wire in 15s. And I think Kyle Wright at least has a potential to be a team streamer when he returns. And I expect myself to have to be streaming for wins, chasing wins. And I think if your guy's going to come back and pitch for the Braves, you want that on your team. So if nothing else, if he could return close to form, I don't expect him to be as good as he was last year to start the year. But if he could be decent, like a SP5, I'm okay with stashing that right now. Honestly, on my specific team, given where I am with my current rotation and all that, I have a team where I think I can stash Kyle Wright. That's why I dropped Owen Miller in the process. And I mentioned Jake Rogers. I said goodbye to my friend and colleague Miguel Amaya, but I expect to see Miguel Amaya on my roster again with how I'm streaming catcher. So those are the four moves in my main. In our OCQ, I only made one move there, and I think I got, let's see if I can pull it up real quick. RCQ is a 12-teamer. I got Samad Taylor, $3 unopposed.
Yeah, not too shabby. I like that one. My moves, first OC. This is where we get fun already. I added Brian Wu, dropped Edward Cabrera 9-0. No runner-up bid on Brian Wu. This is why. And I churn and burn in 12s. Like you said, four is big for you. I make four moves almost every week. But the fact that unopposed, this is 12-team fun, folks. Here we go. Bo Naylor. Grabbed him for $8. Runner-up was $2 because I have Sean Murphy, and I know I needed another catcher for at least the first half of the week, so come on down, Bo Naylor. I added Ezekiel Tovar, dropped Luis Rengifo, 6-5. That was at least close. I know Tovar was going to miss the start of the week, but I liked him for the rest of this week, next week, and he's playing well, so that's an upgrade period. And then I added Will Benson, dropped Will Brennan 3-0. Emmett Sheehan was added for $7 in this league with no runner-up bid. And Luis Montes was not added in this league at all. So, yeah.
There you go.
That this is just nuts. Now going to my second OC, I added Luis Montes in this league, dropped Ryan Nota, $26, runner-up of 21. So, yeah. I added Brian Wu in this league, dropped Edward Cabrera, 22, runner-up of 17, which was unopposed 9-0 in the other league. This is where it gets fun, folks. Ezekiel Tovar, 6-4. So in this league, all three moves are kind of contested, which was rare. Emmett Sheehan in this OC added for $3, no runner-up bid. My third OC added, well, Luis Montes went for 98 in this OC, so went nothing, 26, 98. Welcome to Thunderdome. And the runner-up in this league was 73. Emmett Sheehan was added for 35 in this league with a runner-up of 22. Again, think back to the previous. And then Bo Naylor was added for 32 in this league. It's insane. Don't try to do the math. I made three moves. I added Will Benson, dropped Will Brennan 4-0. Added Edward Olivares, dropped Luis Rengifo 3-0. Added Taiwan Walker, dropped JP France 3-0. I'm going to start just bidding $1 on everything, even though I have the money right now. It's just, I just don't understand it at all. It's absolutely bewildering, some of these moves right now. But yeah, those are my three OCs where all the fun is happening. All right. Let's talk listener questions here. We have one from the Discord I will bring up for you real quick. The Angry Akin, he asked, rest of season ranking of rookie pitchers, or maybe just top five. Yuri Perez, the Millers, Andrew Abbott. Who should we be selling? Basically, of all the rookie pitchers besides Matthew Liberatore, who should we be selling?
Oh, they're keeping Yuri up now all of a sudden. I still think Yuri is short term though.
They're still limiting his innings. Cause like I don't know if you saw, I put it in the chat, because this is why we all love Craig Mish. He's super like approachable. Cause we've been reporting, like, Mish was like, hey, they're gonna send him down when Rogers comes back because they want to massage his innings so he's available late in the year. But then with Rogers' setbacks, Mish tweeted it out last week that hey, Yuri's gonna be in the rotation for the foreseeable future. And I asked, I'm all with still controlling innings? And he says, yes. So the same idea, but in the bigs, which you asked him before, why not do it in the bigs instead of the minors? So he's still going to have his innings concerns.
That's the thing. And on top of that, are we talking four? Is he going to be piggybacking now? Or are we going to drop from five to four innings? Is it going to be, I think he's like at a strict 80 or 90 pitch cap already. Yep. Does that go down to 70? I don't know what they're going to do here. And that's why it's like, I'm kind of concerned with Yuri rest of season. I think he's the, I think the talent's there. I think he's going to be next year's Lizardo in terms of the guy that goes in these rounds. And you're going to really want Yuri Perez on your teams next year, because I think he's going to pitch like the 150, 150 plus innings next year. But this year it's like, oh, it's so tough. I think he might be the sell, and I'm not comfortable saying that though, because I think he's solid, but it's just one of those things where there's too many concerns there, and we don't know if he's gonna pitch enough to get wins. And if he has one troubling inning any given start, he's definitely not going five. So yeah, I'm gonna have to sell Yuri rest of season.
Yeah, you have Yuri. What about, just do quick keep or sell Bobby Miller?
Well, Bobby, I think Bobby's sticking around, no?
Yeah, I'm with you. Bryce Miller.
Oh, he's definitely, yeah, I'm not worried about him either. He's staying.
Brian Wu.
That's the thing. Wu, I think I'm holding Wu too. These guys are, I'm expecting to stick in their rotations. That's the big thing here.
Andrew Abbott.
Oh, you could take him.
His peripheral numbers look atrocious.
Dude, has he started at home yet?
Yes, honestly. his first, at least first for sure, if not first.
Was it first two? Yeah. That he like somehow, because like the other day,
Minefield. That's why I didn't even bid on him, because like I'm looking at everything and I'm like, this is going to get disgusting quick.
I can't wait until it happens. No offense to those who have him, but like his first start was at home, last two on the road.
You remind me of start, the left-handed Graham Ashcraft right now.
The last start was in Houston, and he two balls were hit the center field that would have been home runs in almost every other park, but because it was Houston, they weren't. Yep. Was the thing. So that was, he got away with it there.
Couple others here. Tanner Bibee.
Oh yeah, I'm holding. Or yeah, I'm not selling that.
Logan Allen.
Oh, he's been so iffy. Rough. I'm gonna buy. I think he sticks around because they're running out of options. Like I think that alone will keep him around. I think he'll be serviceable. I know he's been kind of rough, but he's good. I think Logan Allen's legitimately a good pitcher. So every pitcher's gonna have some rough patches. I started him this week against Oakland. I think it's this weekend. Does he get Oakland this week or next week? He has a good matchup this week though too.
It's this week.
Okay, yeah. So next week's a two-step is what it is for him.
Yep. He's got, I got it right here. He's got Oakland this week, because I know Savali. Yeah, if it's Oakland on Thursday, and the next week, it's only one start next week against Kansas City.
Mm. Oh, it's one start against, are you sure it's one? It must be. Yeah,
Let's say switched it up again. Who knows? It's been happening a lot. Last one here, Taj Bradley.
Oh, you have to hold Bradley.
Yeah, I'm just reading off.
Heck, honestly, I'd rather hold Yuri if I have a choice. But I just think if you're going to sell high on a player, I think you're selling high on Yuri because of the innings concerns.
No doubt.
And you know that it's a well-known thing. Like this is, it's one of those things where you know the bad times are coming. You just don't want to accept it. That's where I'm at. Like I don't want to accept that we're not going to keep getting these beautiful starts rest of season. Like he's not going to be able to go 80 over five innings rest of season. They're not going to allow him to pitch that much. Problem.
That is the conundrum, but still might be better than most streamers out there.
That's the thing. So it's like you can hold him, but just understand that there's a chance that he becomes very, very tough.
Wins will become an issue.
Wins, yes. Ratios and Ks will be there.
Will be awesome. Zach Waxman asks, would you start Bayo or Steele this week?
He asked me because I was like, I was floating that question to him, to you guys.
And the real question is because Steele plays in London, by the way.
That's the only reason why I asked. Steele, don't get me wrong, Bayo's been absurdly amazing too. So, but here's the thing. The fact that that's where my pitching staff stands in my main is why I'm very fortunate to be able to have this question. Yep. Most people are plugging both in because they don't have, like, that's not even a thought. I sat Steele because of the dimensions of that park. I think it was, again, shout out to Rob because he had the information in his Discord. I saw him drop it that it's like 330 down each line, 390 to center. It's still very hitter friendly. Not so much sea level. It's still sea level. It's not really, there's no elevation issues, but the field dimensions themselves are very hitter friendly. That, and then in 2019, the ball was juiced, but they were putting up like 20 run games in each outing. And this is one of those things where now I'm going to wear my tinfoil hat. And I said this in our Discord that I do think that the team, I think if there's ever a season and ever a series to give juice balls, it's these series across across the thing
I'll say is that Mexico series with the Giants and the Padres,
you didn't need juice balls there.
But that Sunday game was, it felt like a different ball because the ball, like the score was still high, but nothing like the first two games, and it felt like something changed a little bit. It was awesome.
And you want scoring, you want excitement in these games across, you know, in different countries. You want that for the game. It helps the game grow. It shows excitement. Baseball is supposed to be exciting. You don't want a 2-1 pitcher's duel. Most casual fans aren't going to enjoy that. Yeah, and 100%. I think Steele can still have a good outing. I think Steele can easily go 5 innings, 3 earned runs.
Just risky.
I went with Ryan Baio because he gets the White Sox, who have been horrendous lately. They're coming off bad. Two amazing starts against a terrible Yankees team. Sure, it's a bad schedule, but who cares? You want the guy who's good facing bad teams. Whereas the Cardinals have been pretty bad against lefties in general, and the Cardinals also have been really bad against them lately. But I wore my tinfoil hat there, and I really think that if there's ever a series that's going to get juice balls, it really is going to be the one that is in a different country. So. Yep. I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, and I tend to do that from time to time.
You do,
but at the end of the day, it's not like I did. I had other options, and I don't know if people care about the other options, but you guys are well aware that, you know, it's like I'm not sitting Sonny Gray against Boston.
Okay, we don't need to go through them all. You just have to ask me a question.
I want to go through all of them. It's my main.
I need to get through the podcast. The Guild says, I told you this was coming, Mike. I'm going to shut you down eventually. The Guild says. Thoughts on Morel rest of season?
Yeah,
throw that out there. Ibex turnover at Sleepy Gator. How many times can I click refresh before Christian Encarnacion Strand is promoted? I said they're trying to figure out how to platoon him right now.
I don't know if they're gonna. I don't think you call up CES to platoon him though. That's the thing. I don't know
where he plays.
Well, that's the DH is open. That's where Fraley gets screwed. That's why right now Fraley, all of them have a spot as long as that DH remains open. The second they call up CES, there goes the DH, and there goes the playing time for one of those outfielders. Mm-hmm. And because Steer has to get in there, and Benson, Friedel, and Fraley all can't fit without the DH being available. They all fit with the DH available. So that's where the issue is right now. And so if they call up CES. I think that's the issue. That's why I think CES is kind of stuck. I think they're going to try to trade Fraley or Friedel by the trade deadline or sooner to allow for that move to be made with less, so there's no traffic and no issues with playing time and all that.
I agree with that. I think a trade has to be made first.
So roughly, I'm guessing you'll be refreshing probably through the All-Star break at this point.
Yep, I'd say by the end.
Unfortunately. Or maybe early July, because I think teams are going to start making moves now. I don't think teams are all going to wait for the end of the trade deadline.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, trade needs to be made. Joe G says, is Tristan Casas finally hitting? I've been talking about Casas off and on for the last few, like,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
You said because it off and on.
if you look at his rolling graphs, it is a peaks and valley. And in the month of June, he's hitting 273, seven extra base hits, two homers, walking 18%, striking out 19.5. He's looked great right now. That's for sure. 12% barrel, almost 53% hard hit rate in the month of June. I'd roll with it while you can. The skills are there. Eventually, it's all going to click. But I would roll with it for now. That's what I would say.
Yeah, basically. that's Casas. Wow. These things. What you said, you nailed it, man. It's ups and downs. Enjoy. I think it's going to be short lived though, because didn't they talk about Story coming back in DHing and then Turner playing more first base? So
that's the thing. And Turner was playing first base even like a week ago. He's playing more first base because like Devers is there. Yeah, it's going
to
get interesting.
So get ready to drop Casas, but in the meantime, you're probably rolling him out there while he's hitting better.
Yep, 100%. And then Joe G also asked, Casas, Ozuna, Alec Thomas, Jesus Sanchez, pick two for Daily Roto.
Oh, well, I think today Sanchez gets a tough match. Isn't it a lefty today, actually?
I didn't even check because he's on the main DFS slate, so I did not care. Miami,
it's a lefty, so he's not playing. Kikuchi. So you could take Sanchez out. Ozuna gets a lefty. That's always plus. That's Ranger always Suarez.
He's been better of late.
Yeah, it's true. But still, like, if you're looking for matchups, you got
Bailey Ober.
Who was the other? I forgot the other name.
Alec Thomas.
Alec Thomas.
Arizona faces Ray. You want Thomas for sure, as long as he's in the lineup.
I was going to say, the only issue with Thomas is A, you mentioned lineup, but B, also he's like a 9-spot hitter. So just know that you're going to get probably one less play appearance than any of these other options, at least.
I would go Thomas and Ozuna probably, but Casas is a close second.
Who do they face today?
They face Bailey Ober.
Ober. Oh.
He's been decent.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Yeah, probably I agree with you, but I'm not. Yeah. If you wanted to go Cassis over Thomas, I'm fine with that too. I know Thomas hit the home run, but I don't want to overreact to one home run. But hasn't Ozuna also slowed down quite a bit of late?
Yes, he has. Yes, he definitely has.
Yeah, it really is a mixed bag. Pick your favorites. Based, maybe look at the lineup, see who might get the most plate appearances and attack it that way. Attack plate appearances.
Yep, that's my two cents as well. Last but not least here, Taylor Johnson asks, for all the rowdy truthers out there, are there any positive signs that a big summer is coming? This stings because he's platooning now. He's freaking platooning. What are you seeing when you look at Rowdy Tellez? Because I'm one of the biggest rowdy truthers out there. And so, A, I have bias involved, but I am not optimistic on things I'm seeing.
So I looked into him yesterday for an article, actually, for The Athletic. He's part of, unfortunately, he made the three down part of the lineup trends and the performance trends section, but I found reasons for optimism because I couldn't really find what was wrong. And the only thing I could see different in Rowdy Tellez's profile, the barrel rate's down a little bit, but I think he's still hitting the ball as hard as ever. That's not really a concern. He is swinging so much less than before. I just
scrolled to that on Fangraphs. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. This is why you have to take some time. I mean, I know it's hard to find the time too sometimes, but if you start looking at like, okay, the heart rate's down a little bit, so is the barrel rate, but not enough to...
Strike rate's way up too. Holy crap.
Yeah, so the strikeout rate's up, right? So then if you look at, you're like, why is the strikeout rate up? You're looking, he's not chasing more. The swinging strike rate is as good as, it's actually the best of his career, but the called strikes are up 5%. So you're like, holy crap, he's so passive that he's getting called strikes on him. The swing rate, it's the second straight season, a third straight season of it dipping, but the first time it's been under 43% at any time. So it's 37.7% swing rate, league average being 46%, but even for him, he's never been under 40%. So he's being absurdly patient. He's not chasing. Chase rate's a career best. And contact, he's doing this while keeping a zone contact rate above last year's and overall contact rate up from, probably, it's actually a career high contact rate. So in theory, looking at Tellez, he's swinging less, he's chasing less, and he's making more contact. That combination usually leads to better results, but it's almost like he's just being overly patient. He's not attacking pitches in the zone as much. He's not attacking as much pitches. He's seeing more first pitch strikes than usual. His zone rate's higher than before because I think pitchers are realizing that he's being passive. So they're attacking the zone and Rowdy hasn't attacked back. But that's the only thing. Like, it's a thing that we know he could fix because these are numbers that he's never put up before. So Tellez, I'm not too concerned about. It's just a matter of him kind of attacking, being more on the offensive there at the plate versus as being so passive. It's weird because that's the only thing. Like, he's pulling the same amount of fly balls as usual. His the barrel and hard hit rates are down a little bit, but not terribly. And I think that's because he's just swinging less and making less contact. So Tellez is it's very minor, very. It's one of those things. Almost we go back to, was it Josh Naylor we were talking about? Like, just one little thing. Everything else is there. He's checking boxes. Well, Tellez is kind of doing that thing where Tellez is still checking all these boxes in terms of like things you want to see in his approach. So I think it's just a matter of a small tweak, a small adjustment. I think we get that for the second half. So I'm still in. I wouldn't drop him, but I would bench him until he gets going. But
I can't drop him.
At the end of the day, if you look, there's a lot of reasons for optimism in my opinion. So,
and if he ever gets going, there's no one on the wire that's gonna do what he's gonna do for you.
No, he can go off for like a 5-6 home run week easy. A week, not just a month.
Problem is that week will probably be on your bench. That's the
No. That's why you play NFBC where you can
the midweeks. Yes.
So point. You catch some of it. But yeah, at the end of the day, I think we have him in the OCQ. I'm pretty sure I benched him, but I didn't even think twice about dropping him. So I'm speaking from experience in 12s, even where we have him, and he hasn't even crossed my mind to drop. So I'm starting Nick Prado over him.
There you go. I don't disagree with that. Last, before we take off here, a little bit of news. I talked about in the first pitch podcast, Jazz Chisholm was supposed to start a rehab assignment at the end of the week. He's starting his rehab assignment on Tuesday. That just came down. So that's, we might get Jazz back by the end of the week type situation. He was running around and taking BP in Miami on Monday. So
I wish he'd get him out of center.
Come back. Yeah, get him out of center. But come back for the weekend. I love you, Jazz. I need you, Jazz. Please come back, Jazz. I literally need that position to be in my lineup.
Bad. I hope I would like to think if he's back, he's going to run again, but I am skeptical. I can't say I'm not skeptical, but he's one of those guys that he doesn't play at anything. It's 100% or nothing.
I'm with you.
So I think he's still going to run. I just think it's going to be a pain management thing. So if he doesn't run, I think it's going to be he's playing through the pain. But if he's fine, or if he's even in a little bit of pain, he'll probably get a bunch of cortisone shots the rest of the season. But because yeah, it's rough. I mean, turf toe. Look how bad. What's his face? Judge had turf toe. Now he has like suddenly it's two ligaments that are sprained or something. It's wild.
It's wild. So fun times. Fun times.
Well, as not for those managers.
No. Fun times as always, though, my friend. Any final thoughts as we're a couple weeks away from the All-Star game?
I could use a break. I just want my team to get back on track. So far, so good this week. Last week was rough. Fell out of the top 10. We're still hovering around 10th or 12th, I think, right now. So I'm trying to do better, not looking and overanalyzing it. Like this week, it hurts because I need pitching points, but I have only seven starts this week, and like four of them are on Wednesday. So it's like I get all my starts Wednesday through Friday, and then I get like nothing for the start of the week or over the weekend. Next week, I get 11 starts, and it's just the way it is because I'm not streaming pitching right now. I'm streaming off my bench and using my I'm trying to go for quality over quantity. So it's hard to be patient because I know I need to, you know, I need to stream for strikeouts and wins, but for what to crush my ratios. So I'm trying to be patient because if I can just make it another month, like to the All-Star break, I should get Woodruff back hopefully right around then. Kyle Wright should be joining, and then suddenly I have depth, a lot more depth where I can just stream off my bench, just two starts off my bench as they come, or really good one starts. So that's one. That's the goal I'm trying to get to with my team, but because it's all about hashtag my main, as you all know.
Hashtag my main, of course. We know how that works. But yeah, we'll wrap it up there, folks. As always, it's great chat with Mr. Curlin. Check him out. Game of the Edge Fantasy Athletic and much, much more. He's on Twitter at @Mike_Curlin. I'm on Twitter at @BDintrick. Until next time, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 594, your week 12 Fab recap and much, much more. Catch y'all later.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit matchup to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.